Contented Media presents Dr. Bitcoin, the man who wasn't Satoshi Nakamoto, an original podcast series with Mark Hunter and Arthur Van Pelt.
Hello and welcome to Dr. Bitcoin, the man who wasn't Satoshi Nakamoto, the podcast that plumbs the depths of the mad, mad world that is Planet Craig Wright, offering an alternative and fact-based take on his latest attempts to force the world into recognizing him as Bitcoin's creator, Satoshi Nakamoto. Before we get going with this episode, please note that on this go around the carousel, we're not filtering the adult language, and there's plenty of it, so make sure there's no one listening who you don't want to hear that sort of muck. As usual, I'm joined by Arthur Van Pelt, who appears by kind permission of MasterCard and the Digital Currency Group, and together we'll be casting a sceptical eye over the past month's worth of words and deeds in the BSV world and sorting the massive lies from the small ones. Evening, Arthur. How are you doing today?
I'm perfectly fine, as always, Mark. So far, I maneuvered around COVID-19, and so was my family. We had no issues with COVID. And I'm celebrating 3 years staying out of legal troubles, despite numerous calls from the hardcore BSV fans to drag me into court for my publication. So, yeah, that makes you wonder why that is, huh?
Well, I believe Calvin Ayer said that you would be dealt with in time, so don't count your chickens just yet.
Yeah, true.
Okay, so let's see what's been happening in the Craig Wright sanatorium throughout February. We start this month with Twitter for a couple of reasons. As many listeners will remember, Craig Wright left Twitter in March 2019, deleting some 10,000 tweets before deactivating his account. He has never publicly stated why he left the platform, but at the time of his abrupt exit, he was constantly in bitter arguments with anyone he hadn't blocked about his claims to be Satoshi Nakamoto, which led to him challenging anyone who called him a fraud with a lawsuit. Plenty of people took him up on the offer, one of which, Peter McCormack, we'll come to later on in this episode.
You just said that he deleted it himself. I also remember that he admitted somewhere that Twitter kicked him off when he tried to make his own terms of service for his own closed group. He locked his account, and from there he didn't want his tweets to be copied anymore. And there was also something about threatening to sue Twitter or Jack Dorsey or something. And I think that combination also made the Twitter management a little bit angry, and they kicked him off.
Ah, fair enough. Okay. On February 4th this year, however, Craig Wright stunned everyone by rejoining the Twitter train, making his first post for 2 years and 11 months. One of the reasons Wright says he has come back to Twitter is because one of his nemeses, the platform's founder Jack Dorsey, has left the company, which somehow means he thinks we all want to hear from him again. This new incarnation of Craig Wright seems to be markedly different from the old Twitter Craig Wright, however. Rather than the anti-Bitcoin rants and threats to critics that popularized his last outing, this version only seems to post technical suppositions about Bitcoin and society at large, with no spelling mistakes, no Kim Jong-un-style rhetoric, and no engagement with commenters in any way, shape, or form. The content itself is taken directly from Wright's postings on his BSV Slack group, although the foul-mouthed abuse that still decorates his private channel is studiously ignored. It's as if someone is taking his most boring technical observations, tidying them up, and posting them on Twitter. But why? Arthur, what have you made of this new sanitized Craig Wright, and what do you think the goal is here?
Yeah, good question. The deeper background is a slowly growing desperation. Because after the self-proclaimed win in the Climate versus Wright lawsuit, which was a win of $100 million to pay to W&K, a top 10 USA penalty in 2021, according lawyer Stephen Pally, and we are patiently waiting for Bloom's verdict to add either $500,000 in interest if Craig Wright gets it his way, or $43 million in interest if Ira Kleiman gets it his way. Craig Wright is still not widely recognized as Satoshi, and the altcoin BSV price didn't explode to $25,000 before the end of last year, as some BSV fans hoped for. But it jumped up from this level to, I think, what was it, $165. This recovery was short-lived, however. BSV is now around $85-$90, almost sliced in half in a little over 2 months. It's amazing. So my guess is that there is a lot of despair, frustration, and disbelief lingering in the BSV and Craig Satoshi marketing camp that they won't show, of course. The moment that Craig made his presence known on Twitter, Kelvin Eyre quickly admitted that it was the man himself and not a Craig Wright impersonator. But he also mentioned something interesting. They will try to get Craig Wright verified on Twitter with the blue that he will get a blue check mark after his name, which gives some extra status on Twitter. And with the text creator of Bitcoin, which is on his profile page, they can then show off this verified status in courts and elsewhere. See, I'm a verified creator of Bitcoin.
Ingenious. What have you made of the content itself? I mean, why is he only posting these like technical threads and ignoring all the replies?
Well, what I'm noticing is that Craig Wright is very triggered about the notes subject after he was notified by Bird and Bird lawyers in the Pineapple Hack lawsuit that they consider that some 15,000 notes are active on the Bitcoin network. It is actually 50,000 notes, but that's another story. Bird and Bird only took the number of public notes, while there are also private notes to consider. But in Craig's crippled understanding of Bitcoin, he thinks that only mining notes are important and other notes are not contributing anything to the Bitcoin network. Yeah, that's of course not how Bitcoin works. As mining nodes create blocks, they send them to all nodes, which includes the non-mining nodes of the full nodes. And then these nodes verify the blocks before they add them to the blockchain. It's a simple concept based on proof of work, as Satoshi Nakamoto designed and implemented it in Bitcoin. But yeah, Craig Wright is not Satoshi Nakamoto, of course. So he doesn't understand the concept and shows his umpteenth misunderstanding of Bitcoin. Yeah, you ask me, why is he only posting technical threads? I think he wants to avoid too much discussion about the Satoshi subject, although he did touch on it several times, and he is ignoring the replies, I think, to stay out of trouble a bit of reporting, that people try to report him to get him kicked from Twitter again, as happened in 2019.
What's also interesting here is that the BSV cult, and Kelvin Eyre especially, are always incredibly keen to state that in the future everything will run on BSV. And Wright himself said in September last year that Bitcoin, meaning BSV, can do every transaction globally for every system, Facebook, Google, Shitter, meaning Twitter, Cash, with less lag or latency. And yet, pretty much 3 years after he left Twitter, BSV has done such a horrible job of building a workable social media platform that Wright is left with no choice but to come back to the platform he despises to reach an audience again, claiming it as some kind of win over Jack Dorsey when clearly he could have gone back at any time in the last 3 years. So we have Craig Wright back on Twitter, or some version of him at least, but this month we also lost someone on Twitter at the same time. Arthur, who could that have been?
Yeah. You tell me.
I wonder.
No, seriously. Yeah, I see it as a big joke. But indeed, we sort of lost my alter ego, my legacy kid. I have a backup account since 2018 under my own name. So I was back within a few days under the account Arthur van Pelt. But yeah, the BSV fans maximized and intensified their efforts to get me kicked from Twitter after years of being very irritated by me. And because of one slip-up that I didn't realize at that moment, that was not according to the Twitter rules, which was a call to report Mr. Wright for falsely impersonating Satoshi Nakamoto. Yeah, of course, this enraged them like no tomorrow, and I was reported for targeted harassment. So to be fair, in hindsight, it is targeted harassment, of course. Sharing my knowledge about Craig's lies and forgeries, telling my opinions about the BSV train wreck, humping, pumping, but mostly dumping along is one thing. But indeed, sending an army of my followers to him to report him is another thing. So I apologized to Twitter in several appeals, offered to delete the tweet, but all I got back were automated bot messages that my account was suspended. Luckily, most of the major items have been copied in my articles, but there is still a treasure box of debunks to be found there.
There were two things that I found funny about the response from the BSV community after you were suspended. Firstly, was the fact that you're continually labelled as someone who doesn't matter to them, who it's not worth paying attention to. And yet you were a huge topic of conversation for about 2 days after you were suspended, to the point where they even like made memes to celebrate your suspension. If you really meant nothing to them, then your departure would have been ignored, wouldn't it?
Yeah, one would think so. But yeah, reality is, though, that several of the hardcore Fiktoshi and BSV fans, they thoroughly hate me. Since they cannot debunk any sentence that I have written, and since I relentlessly keep on pumping evidence of Craig Wright's lies, fraud, and Satoshi cosplay out there, and since I'm quoted quite regularly in the mainstream press, yeah, they cannot really ignore me.
Yeah. Secondly, and perhaps funniest of all, were the people saying how you had now lost your job as a paid BSV critic. For a bit of background, Arthur, along with me to a lesser extent, I think, is one of a cabal of BSV critics who Calvin Ayer and his cronies claim are being paid to spread lies about BSV by the Digital Currency Group or MasterCard or that bunch of corporations. And this all dates back to Craig Wright's conspiracy theory over the supposed hijacking of Bitcoin in its early days, which we covered in our bonus episode called Writing History. Now, these conspiracy theorists claim that by being suspended, you had now lost your platform and so were not sufficiently enough of a player to warrant the employee of these Bitcoin hijackers. This is hilarious for many reasons, not least because you've been accused of making leaps of logic between certain points, for example, claiming that Wright didn't buy Bitcoin before 2013 because there's no evidence that he did. And yet they are so quick to state as fact that you're being paid by the DGC or the Rothschilds or whatever because it suits their narrative. Yet again, there's no evidence for this whatsoever. Time after time, they turn to the fact that you accept donations for the work you do, which the BSV community has misconstrued into saying you do it for a living. So, did you get a letter in the post from Adam Back this week saying you've been fired?
No, of course not.
Well, thank goodness for that.
Absolutely not.
If anyone has any evidence to the contrary, please email or tweet us with it because we'd love to see it. We really would.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
In a related episode, I found out this month that I myself have in fact been accused of being paid to attack Craig Wright in BSV. Now, I write for a crypto news outlet, I won't say which one, where I have indeed written critical posts on Craig Wright and Calvin Ayer that broadly match what we'll talk about here on the podcast. This has led me, naturally, to be accused of being paid to attack BSV. This, again, is a nice theory, but one that also happens to be completely untrue. Now, I've been working for this particular outlet for nearly 3.5 years, writing on average about 1,000 pieces a year for them on everything from Avalanche to Zilliqa. So that's around 3,500 articles in total, across which I've praised and criticised almost every reputable and disreputable project in the space, including Bitcoin. And there are plenty of projects that I've slated more than BSV in that time. If I was being paid to write bad things about Wright and BSV, then I'd be doing it a hell of a lot more than I am. Of course, the funniest thing about all this is what happens over at CoinGeek. Let's remember the argument here, that the likes of Arthur and I are paid to write negatively about Craig Wright and BSV, which they say is media manipulation. Arthur, how does that tally with what CoinGeek writers are paid to produce?
Yeah, these people are actually paid, where we aren't at all, to pump out as much positive propaganda about Craig and BSV. But for me, the most important difference is not about being paid or not. For me, the most important thing is that the CoinGeek cabal produces a lot of questionable information, and I'm being very friendly here, which they never correct based on my or other people's critics.
No, they never do. And I love the fact that we're accused of being paid trolls by Calvin Ayer, who's actually employing paid trolls. It's incredible.
Yep.
Talking of Wright's social media output, the day before Valentine's Day, Wright took to his BSV Slack channel to explain why he anticipated not being able to move for Valentine's Day cards from his employees. Let me make this simple. If you ever want a job with me, investment, a kind word, do not ever use the word cryptocurrency positively. If I discover you have, from this moment forward, consider me and you at odds. If you bullshit it, you are a fucking brain dead stupid and a total cunt and dumb as a dead slug, then you may think Bitcoin had any connection to the cypherpunk movement in its development. It didn't. I will be making certain those terms are never used in anything I'm associated with, or with people I associate with, in any form. There you go, Enchain. Pop that on your recruitment posters. This was far from the only such mention Craig Wright made of his opinion on cryptocurrencies this month. Indeed, he embarked on one of his days-long multi-rants about the differences between cryptocurrencies and Bitcoin, which he now insists be called electronic cash. These included such gems as, I'm going to assume that the phrase "I like cryptocurrency" means that you are a homophobic, racist inbred who sleeps with his or her kin and has escaped from prison for multiple child sex offences from now on and treat you as well as that deserves. And if you call it crypto, you are my enemy. If you go on a crypto podcast, get the fuck away from me. You write for crypto, you are the enemy. If you have crypto in any website, any post, you will find I am your enemy. No excuse, no exception. And if you associate with any cryptocurrency at all and you support that shit, I understand some of you have jobs in an industry that is lower than a person who gives enemas for a living with no gloves. Keep it to yourself. I want nothing to do with crypto. Okay, Craig, I think you've made your point.
Yeah.
Wright's rants on this subject are all connected to his insistence that Bitcoin was never intended as an anti-government creation, that it was always designed to work within the law and be properly traced, but that these hijackers twisted it and encouraged its usage for illicit purposes. This approach reflects why he is trying to get all companies that have ties to Bitcoin to be taken down, and BSV, which remember is supposed to reflect this original vision, to take its place as the only legally compliant blockchain. Arthur, is this just an attempt from Wright to position BSV as the one only legally compliant blockchain in the space, or is there more to it than this?
Again, a good question. I see it like this. The rants with a strong language is what his followers and fans appear to appreciate to a certain extent, as they are attracted to this type of language. Although I'm also reading more and more critics lately. The content itself is only secondary, I think, as it's not unique to BSV to be law-abiding and legally compliant. It's just a narrative that Craig, and with him, Kelvin, strongly emphasize to distinct themselves from Bitcoin. But in the big picture, it's a nothing burger, if you ask me.
This month, we also saw updates with some of Wright's legal cases, which we'll cover now. We'll come to an update in the COPA case later on, but first we'll deal with the Peter McCormack libel case. We didn't really get round to covering this in Season 1, so we'll take care of that now. As I mentioned earlier, McCormack was one of a glut of individuals sued by Wright in early 2019 after the podcast host repeatedly accused Wright of not being Satoshi Nakamoto. Wright claimed £100,000 in damages, claiming his reputation had been negatively impacted as a result of the claims, with legal costs likely to run into the millions for McCormack if he loses. McCormack hasn't fared too well over the preliminary aspects of the case, with defeats over motions regarding discovery delays impacting his case early on. In October 2020, Calvin Ayres' BSV propaganda machine CoinGeek claimed that one of McCormack's financial backers, Tether, had removed its support, suggesting that the move indicates that whatever evidence Tether has seen is overwhelming and likely fatal to their defence, and that it is very clear from these actions that Tether has confirmed Craig is Satoshi. Arthur, as usual, CoinGeek got this spectacularly wrong, didn't they?
Yeah, of course. CoinGeek clearly missed or ignored. Well, I think they wanted to miss the irony in Peter McCormack's tweet where he said that he had seen a crazy amount of evidence. I'm not aware of the financial details of the whole thing, but it appeared to me that it was in effect Peter who refused to get further funding from Tether.
Yeah, indeed. Tether's lawyer, Stuart Hogener, dismissed the CoinGeek article on both counts, saying they would continue to fund McCormack if he wanted. Now, we heard last month how Wright's UK-based legal team, Ontier, failed in their attempts to block evidence from the Clyman case getting into the COPA case, to which Wright responded by saying that, in fact, he wanted it there in the first place. This suggested that not only was Wright's legal team not acting on their client's instructions, but they were in fact doing the exact opposite of what he wanted. We got another example of this thinking in the McCormack case this month. Back in July 2021, a CoinGeek piece claimed that one of the more frustrating things about Dr. Craig Wright's battle with his critics is that so few of his lawsuits end up going to trial or even reach a courtroom at all. This isn't a choice on the part of Dr. Wright, who has been pursuing litigation consistently. Arthur, how many times did Wright's legal team try to get the Clyman case thrown out before it got to court?
Rivero Mestre, yeah, they tried several times. Sometimes because of the jurisdiction and sometimes because they said plaintiffs didn't have a case. Craig had falsely informed them that Dave Clyman wasn't the only member of WNK Info Defense Research LLC. Yeah, but all these efforts failed so far. Craig's forgeries didn't impress, so to say.
Yeah, and this includes halfway through the trial, before Wright was due to give evidence for the defence, the one thing he had claimed he wanted to do all along. It must be so frustrating when you're dying to get into court and your legal team keeps trying to stop you.
Oh, this is so hilarious.
It's indeed. Nonsense, isn't it? It's so stupid. Anyway, back to the McCormack case. CoinGeek reported in November 2021 that Wright had appeared eager to face McCormack in court since the lawsuit was filed back in 2019. However, with McCormack refusing financial backing from Tether, his legal team was left with no choice but to abandon his defence, leaving Ontier with the opportunity to get the case closed in their favour without trial. With Wright apparently desperate to take his enemies on in the courtroom, however, they would seem to have been between a rock and a hard place. Or not, as CoinGeek themselves reported. Wright's lawyers had hoped to resolve the case this week by asking the judge to resolve the lawsuit in Dr. Wright's favour without a trial. Well done, CoinGeek, another case of narrative whiplash. McCormack's decision to throw in the towel left Ontier an open goal to get the case decided in their favour without trial, whether their client wanted it or not. Arthur, did Wright's team score this open goal?
No, they didn't. If I remember well, there were some discrepancies in the timestamps of the tweets that Craig Wright complained about, and the judge noticed that. Hence, he was not allowed to enter a summary judgment at that specific moment.
Quite brilliant. So, with the trial going ahead thanks to incompetence from Wright and his camp, pre-trial hearings took place in February 2021, with Wright scoring a major victory in October that year when all but one of McCormack's four pillars of defence was struck out, leaving him with only one option, to prove that Wright's reputation didn't suffer serious harm as stipulated in the UK Libel Act. McCormack filed a final appeal against this ruling, but this month that appeal was rejected, meaning that the trial that Wright would already have won had his legal team not cocked up their paperwork will go ahead in May. Arthur, how correct was Calvin Ayer when he said this month that the case is already over and that the trial is simply to decide the level of damages that Peter McCormack will pay?
Well, technically speaking, Calvin is not correct, of course. The case is still ongoing and the trial will determine if Craig's reputation is indeed harmed. And yeah, call me biased, but I think it would be most fair that Peter McCormack is going to win this case on this last point, because Craig's reputation was and still is at record lows in 2019 after the wired Gizmodo failure in December 2015 and the signing sessions debacle of May 2016.
As a nice little bow to wrap up this section, Peter McCormack actually interviewed Craig Wright for his podcast, What Bitcoin Did, in April 2018, a year before Wright sued him. The interview is actually a surprisingly cordial affair, although McCormack does say in the podcast notes, "Do I believe that Craig is Satoshi? No, I don't." And in fact, the entire episode is called, "Is Craig Wright Satoshi? No." So it's fair to say that McCormack's card might have been marked from that point on. The interview itself is fairly uneventful, with Wright espousing the same opinions and theories he subscribes to today regarding the deviation of Bitcoin from the white paper, although it is odd to hear him discussing Roger Ver in pleasant terms and saying how Bitcoin Cash is the coin that represents the real vision of Bitcoin, bearing in mind it was just months or even weeks later that the seeds of the Bitcoin Cash BSV split would be sown. There are a couple of little nuggets of note, however. The first is where Wright tells McCormack, "Like it or not, I produce patents. I produce intellectual property, and much of that will go to Bitcoin Cash for free. It will be available for people to use. The very simple answer to that is if you don't like it, don't use it." Arthur, how does this concept of Wright giving away free patents tally with his approach 4 years down the line?
Well, the approach of allowing to use the Enchain patents for free within the now BSV environment is still the same as far as I know, but there is a substantial change in tone lately. I've read several times already that Craig Wright plans to enforce his patents on the wider crypto industry, or at least he threatens with it. Let's put it like that.
Yeah, this idea of free patents for everyone doesn't strike me as something that is in Craig Wright's repertoire, but yeah, let's see how that one pans out. The second amusing tidbit is a comment that highlights Wright's flip-flopping nature when it comes to what he thinks Bitcoin is. Here he is in the interview talking about Bitcoin.
The reality of this scenario is not cash. It is not a system that globally people can incorporate into their daily spending patterns. It is a system that allows a few people to trade a digital asset. especially a few people trading a digital asset on an exchange, where the reality is none of that moves off the exchange. It allows gambling, it allows speculation, and it allows a few people to have a dream of winning big and getting a Lamborghini and all the rest. The reality of that is not what Bitcoin is about.
So in 2018, Wright says that gambling is not what Bitcoin is about, and yet BSV, which he says represents Satoshi's true vision, is accepted at more than a dozen crypto gambling sites and apps, with CoinGeek itself saying in August last year that BSV and gambling are a perfect match. You see, why would Arthur and I bother making stuff up when the source material does the job for us? We mentioned the COPA update, and that's what we'll turn to now. This month saw the conclusion to a motion we looked at in more detail last month, involving Wright's failed attempt to get material from the Clyman case kept out of the COPA case. This conclusion should have been a merely procedural affair, with the judge finalising costs owed by Wright. However, as we know by now, nothing involving Craig Wright is simple, and the ruling was yet another example of how supporters of the two sides view his shenanigans. The main headline was the award itself, with Judge Paul Matthews ruling that the £123,000 demand by COPA's legal team was too much and reduced the award to £70,000. That wasn't all, however, as Judge Matthews took the opportunity of the filing to accuse both sides of mudslinging and criticise them for behaving in an ultra-aggressive and uncooperative way and like school children. Clearly, he hasn't spent any time on crypto Twitter. Some in the BSV community chose to label published screenshots of the ruling as spewing propaganda, while BSV shill Kurt Vuckert Jr. commented that he was just glad to see small blockers sell their souls to Zuck and Dorsey's neo-leftist panopticon of control just because they're rooting against CSW. Talk about using a sledgehammer to crack a nut. There were even better takes regarding the ruling, with another Twitter user claiming that anyone reporting on the story wasn't applying the appropriate context because the judge penalised COPA for nearly twice that amount but decided later to refund half. Now, Arthur, I couldn't find any evidence that COPA has been penalised for anything in this case so far, and none was provided by these individuals when I asked for it, so I don't know where they got that from. Can you shed any light on this one?
No, Mark, I'm afraid not. As you said, the £70,000 ruling that Craig Wright should pay to COPA for his shenanigans and lack of cooperation so far, it's the first time in this case that a monetary penalty, in this case in Craig's disadvantage, has been ruled.
I mean, even CoinGeek didn't report such an event, and they would have been on that like a shot had it actually happened, wouldn't they?
Yeah, exactly.
Talking of CoinGeek, in what must rank as a first, it actually acknowledged that COPA had been the winners in this particular battle, although they couldn't help but sign off their report by saying that such a significant departure from the proposed costs would indicate he, the judge, is largely critical by the conduct of COPA and their legal representatives, Bird and Bird. This ignores the fact that the judge criticised both camps equally for their conduct, and in fact, talking of legal terms, Arthur, didn't the judge give another example of Ontier's shortcomings?
Yeah, exactly, they did. Allow me to quote. The only part of the defendant's application that was successful was the only part that did not need to be argued, because the claimant was seeking permission to delete the very paragraphs that the defendant wished to strike out.
So Ontier was claiming success for Wright over something that COPA had already conceded?
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, that's how CoinGeek tried to spin it, hoping that no one ever reads the actual ruling. But yeah, that's what we do, right? Don't trust CoinGeek, as they broke the trust on basically every occasion we can think of when it comes to Wright's legal endeavors. Mm-hmm. So we verify things with the source material that they use.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, let's return briefly to the reasons behind the COPA lawsuit for a second, which started when Wright demanded that Square, now called Block, take down the Bitcoin white paper as part of his legal spree in early 2021. COPA, of which Block is a founding member, demanded proof from Wright that he was Satoshi before they would take it down, proof that Wright declined to offer. Shortly after, COPA filed an injunction against Wright, demanding that the UK High Court declare Mr. Craig Wright does not have copyright ownership over the Bitcoin white paper. If COPA wins its case, Wright will be forbidden from claiming he's Satoshi Nakamoto in the UK, which is a pretty big step considering Wright resides in and therefore works out of the UK. Now, COPPA says that it exists because it wants to keep cryptocurrency and blockchain-related technologies free from the clutches of patent trolls, maintaining a library of patents submitted by its members that any of them can use for free. This is completely analogous to the actions of Craig Wright and Enchain, however, who have some 200 patents to their name relating to blockchain technology, which the company is keen to license. This month, Meta, the new name for the company that owns Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp and more, joined COPPA to bolster its metaverse ambitions, a move that has, naturally, ruffled a few feathers, as is evidenced from our man Kurt Vuckert Jr., who used the news to espouse the current theory on why COPPA is suing Wright.
We really, really don't like Facebook, but what Facebook is doing is they are coalescing, they are joining forces with the COPPA people because they want the metaverse to be built on crypto blockchain something technology that is all open, but under their control. And there's a real problem in their way. And the problem is the Enchain patent portfolio. See, Enchain has been spending the last 6-7 years now patenting things. Craig is in their way. The Enchain patent portfolio is in their way. Mark Zuckerberg and Jack Dorsey and Michael Saylor and some of the other people here, they do not want to pay royalty fees to Enchain for every action that occurs in the metaverse. That's what's really going on here. And instead of just dealing with it, like dealing with it the way that a business would deal with it, like, okay, they own a bunch of patents. We're going to need to pay a bunch of licensing fees for the technology that we're building. They're saying, you know what? We want to take that property away from Enchain. That's why they're suing Craig. They need to paint Craig as a fraud. Craig must be a fraud for their business model to work.
This concept was then referenced by Wright himself, who on February 6th told his BSV followers, "Why do you think both Mark Zuckerberg and Jack Dorsey are suing me? It is not because I'm saying I am Satoshi. I may happen to be, and I am. They are suing me because I am a threat to their business model." Wright continued this argument a week later on February 13th when he told them, "Funny how all these people hate me, call me names, but really just want to steal from me. Envy, jealousy, greed. If what I was doing had no value, they would not want the IP, the patents. Yet, let's fork BSV code, when we bankrupt him we'll take his patents. Yet nobody spends money attacking others to gain a nothing." From a personal point of view, I am disappointed that Meta has joined COPPA because it's pretty clear that Facebook, and Twitter to a lesser extent I think, is responsible for a lot of the ill in the world right now, and it doesn't paint COPPA in a particularly good light. The BSV community has had a field day with this, and to be honest, I can't really blame them. After all, it's a bit like being befriended by the school bully. But Wright's response has been telling. Wright has been banging on about bringing tech giants like Twitter and Facebook down and replacing everything with BSV for some time now, with Wright now saying these corporations' only way of winning is by bankrupting him and taking his patents through court action. Arthur, this is one of those arguments that sounds compelling on the surface, but actually, it doesn't stand up to any scrutiny at all, does it?
No. First, allow me to add my two cents in this discussion, mm-hmm. and that is that I am actually happy that Meta has joined COPPA, but that is for the sole reason that Meta now also subscribes to the COPPA patent pledge. Exactly as it was said in the press release, through joining COPPA, Meta has pledged not to enforce its core cryptocurrency patents against anyone, except for defensive reasons, effectively making these patents freely available for all to use. But back to the subject of scrutiny. You know, the BSV patents belong to Enchain. They do not belong to Craig Wright. And Calvin Ayer is footing the bill of creating and filing all these patents and not Craig Wright, which gives him some incredibly deep pockets to work with. And we only have Wright's word that his or Enchain's patents are useful to the likes of Block and Meta, but that seriously remains to be seen. We know from several sources that Enchain's patent portfolio is nothing short of garbage, to say it unfriendly. I remember coming across an industry report that said that the patents have a technical relevance of exactly zero, and that it is the weakest portfolio in the industry.
Yeah, the criticism I've read is that the patents are either so specific that they have little actual value to anyone, or that they are predated by existing blockchain technology, so they've got no value there either. It seems like the idea is to basically kind of fluff Enchain up to make it appear more impressive than it is. Shock horror. I love the argument that Meta wants to get its hands on that pile of rubbish.
But let's not forget, the COPPA case against Craig Wright is not about patents per se, but about his claim that he owns the copyright to the Bitcoin white paper and the Bitcoin code, and that he tried to enforce his copyright claim specifically when it comes to the white paper to Block and several other COPPA members. And instead of waiting for Craig to make the next move, they sued him for not having this copyright.
This seems to be another example of the BSV community doing what they've accused us of and making an unfounded leap of logic. This time, that in COPPA trying to get the injunction, they're trying to diminish Wright's reputation, which somehow leads to them grabbing patents that he doesn't even own. Also, what's incredibly ironic here is that Wright famously boasted last year regarding his Pineapple Hack case that he would personally hunt every developer until they are broke, bankrupt, and alone. And yet here he is, crying that someone else wants to bankrupt him. As Craig is so keen on saying, this is what happens in the real world. What we can also clearly see developing here is another of those narrative shifts that occur commonly in the BSV community, those moments where Calvin Ayer, Craig Wright, and Kurt Vuckert all come together to rehash and push out the new party line in perfect synchronicity. Let's also not forget that in 2015, a certain Craig Wright signed a contract with Encrypt, the company that would eventually become Enchain, which meant that, to paraphrase Vuckert himself, Wright must be Satoshi for their business model to have worked, which is why millions of dollars were spent on building up Wright, only to have him drop the entire thing on its head in May 2016. We can't leave this section without reporting Calvin Ayer's take on the COPPA judgment. When the news came that he owed COPPA's lawyers 70 grand, assuming he's still picking up Craig Wright's tab, of course, Ayer tweeted that this is a very good outcome for Craig going forward in this trial. Judge is aware of the COPPA con. This presumably refers to Bird and Bird's initial demands for legal fees, although how this relates to COPPA isn't exactly clear. After all, it's the lawyers who set the fees, not the client. Ayer further explained that COPPA trying to steal Satoshi legacy and IP and the judge is onto them based on how they are acting, and said that the filing was mostly Craig's team letting the judge see how the other side is acting, and brilliantly added that Craig's side got what they were looking for though, judge is onto COPPA. Arthur, how exactly did Wright's team get what it was looking for in this motion?
Yeah, Mark, these people never fail to amaze me with a desperate twist and turns to change a clear loss in a lawsuit, or in this case, in an intermediate ruling in a lawsuit, to a win.
Absolutely.
Of course, Craig and his counsel didn't get what it was looking for at all. Firstly, COPPA managed to drop Climate versus Wright evidence in the case, and Craig tried to stop that, but he did not succeed. Then the 70 grand that Craig has to pay, there is no win whatsoever here. Just a standard correction downward as they happen like clockwork in legal disputes. So throw everything at the wall and see what sticks is what I would call it.
This Kleiman material is clearly prejudicial to their case or they wouldn't have fought to keep it out. And if Ayer is seriously suggesting that Wright is happier with Bird and Bird being pulled up for overcharging than he would have been if the material had been barred, then he's more cracked up than he appears. Either that, or he's talking out of his arse.
Yeah, he is certainly talking from his behind, so to say. Nay, seriously, allow me to say one thing about it, because he is trying to twist that his sole existence is being despised by all these large parties because he is so powerful. But let me tell you, the main reasons for people not liking him and people wanting him to get out of the Bitcoin arena is that he is lying about being Satoshi. He is misusing the courts to abuse his critics and his competition. He is a patent troll. And he's an overall con artist. I'm reading this from a tweet that I came across today from a Twitter member called Tak Horigoshi. And he nicely summarized for me what it's all about. The whole BSV project is pretty irrelevant. Mr. Wright himself is pretty irrelevant. But the whole thing together, the lies, the misuse of legal structures, being a patent troll, and that makes people not liking him.
Something else Wright mentioned in his Slack group this month actually clarifies something that I couldn't quite put my finger on until now. On February 16th, when talking about his plans for BSV, Wright said, "I want corporations, not fucking asshat losers in mum's basement." Similarly, Calvin Ayer is always telling Twitter how BSV is the only blockchain that can scale to enterprise level, sometimes dozens of times a day. What didn't quite twig with me before, Arthur, was that this is not how a company behaves if it has the grand ambitions that BSV has. I don't know of any other business of any standing, let alone one that wants to attract blue chip companies and entire governments, whose principal financial backers blanket spam Twitter with claims of how amazing their product is, while at the same time carrying out an incessant smear campaign against anyone involved in legal action against an employee, while that employee themselves publicly calls people cunts, wankers, and assholes. How on earth do they think they're going to attract top companies and governments if their figureheads are talking like that? Do they not realize how toxic they're making their own brand?
Yeah, funny that you bring this up, Mark, because as it happens, I published an article a few days ago that dives into this subject. The article is basically about Calvin Ayer mostly, and I'm trying to figure out what is his motivation to keep this whole thing going. And the article is called Cole Turner is an Asshole. That refers back to a role play that Calvin Ayer did himself in the early 2000s when he set up Bodog. But allow me to quote from that article. Calvin Ayer repeatedly showcasing himself on social media with barely legal and barely dressed female teenagers in barely decent situations like lap dancing, hanging around his neck, or twerking in front of his eyes is not very helpful to build a reputation either. No organic adoption whatsoever of his self-proclaimed law-abiding and enterprise-ready blockchain project has taken place since November 2018, when, as said, BSV split from BCH, by itself already another failing knockoff of Bitcoin, now positioned on number 25 of the CoinGecko market cap list. Now, and then I skip a bit. And absolutely killing for the reputation of Calvin Ayer and his BSV altcoin project is, here we go, Craig Wright being a bad-mouthed, trigger-happy litigator. Here we see an example where the Australian government simply rejects to support projects that involve BSV because of its reputation. So allow me now to take an tweet that is also coming from that article. It's from Twitter member elas.co from July 2021. So it's not really that old even. And the tweet literally says, just got word ELAS application for the Australian blockchain pilot grants was rejected. One of the reasons, the blockchain technology identified by the applicant, Bitcoin SV, is subject to legal proceedings and has a poor reputation. I don't know whether to laugh or to cry. Undersigned ELAS.co. So that is an BSV fan or company, I don't know. And they tried in Australia, but the name BSV has a bad reputation.
Interesting. And as well for me, it's not just the foul language that confuses me from a business perspective. It's also who they choose to engage with. There was a guy on Twitter this month who posted something negative about BSV who describes himself as a house husband by day, shitcoin trader by night. And Calvin Ayer responded to him saying, BSV is worth more than all crypto combined by a mile, so these markets are manipulated and meaningless. Now, let's put that into perspective. This is a billionaire who believes, or appears to at least, that the company he's bankrolling will eventually be big enough to be the infrastructure behind the entire internet. And yet here he is, wasting his time trying to convince a house husband and shitcoin trader that market manipulation is the only reason BSV isn't worth over $94,000 per token right now. I'm not cherry picking here, he does this every day, time and time again, replying to the most random of people railing against Bitcoin or crypto in general, before giving all sorts of excuses why BSV isn't achieving its goals, which, by the way, is always someone else's fault. Again, this is not normal behaviour for someone on the executive board of a company of any standing, let alone one that has such grand ambitions. And they think they're ready to replace the world's digital commerce. Really?
Yeah, beats me, Mark. Seriously, beats me. I noticed the same tendency from Calvin. He is responding to everybody left and right, to mainstream media. He tries to push the name. He always tries to push his website where people can find information. But seriously, what I noticed, I think it was yesterday or the day before yesterday, this guy tweeted out that because of the negative atmosphere and the I think it was, yeah, something like that. Because of the negative atmosphere around BSV, it must have something. So he became a BSV fan for that reason alone.
Interesting theory.
Yeah, and who could be found in the thread at least once? Mr. Calvin Ayer. I mean, come on, you're a billionaire. You're running a business with hundreds of people. You have better things to do. Again, it beats me.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, it all seems that the BSV community and its leadership especially are so confident that all digital commerce will just fall into its lap, that they can just act however they want because the matter is like a fait accompli. They don't even need to try and convince businesses to use their product because one day they just will. Unfortunately, this theory relies on Wright not just legally taking down Google, Amazon, Twitter, Meta and the rest of them, but having the whole world accept BSV as the alternative, as the one single tech giant that underpins everything. And even if they think that's going to happen, the way they're going about it by legal force, it's just going to drive people away, isn't it? Also, it takes a fair bit of power to shift the world's internet users onto one single platform. Isn't that even above Craig Wright's powers?
Nah, yeah. You might remember his rants about being the punishment of God in cryptocurrency and that he would bring nuclear Armageddon to the industry. So, yeah, he might have some force, right?
That's true. I'd forgotten about that, of course, yes. Oh, well, maybe I'm thinking too small here, perhaps. I'm not sure. Well, that brings us to the end of this episode of Dr. Bitcoin, the man who wasn't Satoshi Nakamoto. Before we go, Arthur, please can you remind us of your new Twitter handle?
Yeah, my new Twitter handle is simply Arthur Van Pelt with underscores between the words. So it's Arthur underscore Van underscore Pelt. Same guy, same content, but of course slightly more careful with the targeted harassment now, of course. But on with a new handle.
Yeah, make sure you follow Arthur again for the latest, although potentially less fiery, news regarding Craig Wright. You can, of course, follow this podcast on Twitter at Dr. Bitcoin Pod, where you'll hear about all our latest developments, release dates, and bonus episodes. And you can email us at drbitcoinpod@gmail.com if you want to let us know what an amazing job we're doing. All bad reviews or corrections will be deleted. Joke. Arthur, thank you for your time and your insight once again.
Oh, yeah, sure thing, Mark. And to all our dedicated followers and listeners, thanks for listening again.
Yes, indeed. Thank you once again for listening, and we'll see you again next month. Thank you for listening to this episode of Dr. Bitcoin, the man who wasn't Satoshi Nakamoto. If you enjoyed what you heard, we'd love it if you could rate and even review us on your podcast app of choice to help us spread the word. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast too in order to get the episodes the moment they drop. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again soon.
You've been listening to Dr. Bitcoin, the man who wasn't Satoshi Nakamoto. Written by Mark Hunter, with additional material by Arthur Van Pelt. Editing and production by Mark Hunter. This has been a Contented Media production.